This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Storey.
Chapter 25. Still in the dream, Tess's grip on Tom tightened as though she had just gone into spasm. At the back of his head, the brace warmed to a dull, steady glow that seemed to wash through him like a relaxing drug. But, sensing Tess's anticipation, Tom knew that there was more to come, and he wouldn't like it one bit. He expected pain, but when the thing happened, it was beyond anything he could have guessed outside of his nuclear dreams. Somewhere in his head, a slight buzz grew and multiplied to a hideous hive swarming through his brain. He shook his head, an automatic reaction to the sense that a dozen insects had just crawled inside each of his ears, and the bees or wasps or bloated flies divert to a polyphony of individual drones that roamed his brain, picking up and dropping off payloads as though workers sorting through an impossibly large store. Part of his mind seemed to drift with the vibrating acoustic points. They travelled through his bones, down his arms, to Tess on one side and to the malignant fingers clutching his on the other. The sound in his thoughts became little packages flowing between the three bodies, picking up and dropping bits of him and the girl and the man in a froth of mismatched egos. And then he saw himself through the man's eyes, and Tess too. And he saw anger, a constant anger, confused with a mix of awe and fear. Tom could not unpick the feelings, but they swirled with the furious buzzing and prickled the man's leprous skin every time he looked at the pair in the seats opposite him. A ball of light, large as a car, zoomed and left in an unknown sky. Words whished through black space and died. Two babies lay naked on purple heather. A hideous creature, barely alive, scooping the tiny bundles in his mottled arms. And then the questions. Anatomy, metals, electricity, stock, chemistry, nanotech, tools, money. The hive swarmed and plundered and drained the boy of life until he could take no more and lapsed into unconsciousness. Tom awoke to the sound of his mother's voice. He repeated a phrase he'd heard before. "Under the hagstone," he seemed to remember the beautiful ghost in his mind tell him. But with each repeat, it changed and cleared to become something different. Clearer and clearer still, until the phrase was Chinese whispered to something else.
"Under the hagstone. Under the hatstone. The heartstone. The heartstone. Under the heartstone."
The light was dim now. Kneeling on the ground in the real world above the ruin, Tom looked at the object in his hand. The heartstone. The stone he made for his mother. Fighting the crippling image of his mother in the hands of the beast, his sister, Tess in the chair, and the buzzing drones in his head, he probed the ground at the point he'd found the pendant. Nothing made sense to him, but if there was the slightest chance of saving her, he had to try. She was dead. He knew that. She was a ghost, and so was his sister. But then he was alive, and so they could be too. Whipping the band from his head, he pushed the torch close to the ground and saw it immediately. A tiny recess, partially hidden under a flap streaked in Tom's blood, scratched by his reddied nails. It looked like a stone, but was a hinged cover hiding a rusted handle like a horse's stirrup. Upside down, its shaft buried in the ground. Shaking fingers, blood and grime encrusted, The fingers of his left hand curled around the bar and focused his universe on that one spot as though it had become a yellow and black handle under the seat of a burning pilot's plane. The metal groaned, screaming through the darkness as though he had broken its bones. The returning silence when it stopped stretched like cotton wool over the mountains. The silence continued, even as a hole as big as a grave sank into the ground on a sloping floor that ramped down and inside the mountain. Tom jumped to his feet and stepped away from the opening. He took his torch and swung the beam forward, sticking his head out to peer as far as he could into the hole. He listened and heard nothing. The night had stopped, the sounds in his head gone. The moment, a pause in the universe before some cosmic cataclysm Tom could not fathom. He turned towards the cottage, hidden beyond the lip of the grass terrace. Ayrshire still twinkled at him, a merry hint of normality that belonged to everyone, it seemed, except to him. He walked down the hill, stopped and looked back up at the rocks. He should tell Catriona in case anything happened. But what could she do? This was his problem. He'd already brought her enough trouble. If he was sensible, he could have a quick look, stay close to the surface and be back in minutes. Knowing full well that he was kidding himself, he turned back up the hill, placed the torch band back on his head, edged towards the ramp, and walked slowly into the mountain.
Chapter 26.
The tunnel air was fetid, warmer than the cool night on the surface. Tom looked over his shoulder as he descended the ramp and took a last look at the sky, a dark slit between roof and the upward sloping floor where his torchlight had no purchase. Footsteps, his own, commingled with the sound of running water. The ground was solid rock, the walls smooth and cold and close. Tom had to keep his arms tight to his body to avoid them scraping either side of the narrow passage. Ahead, the beam fanned out to light the smooth rock panelling the tunnel. He clutched the stone heart in his right hand, its power to shift the world from the present to the tangled emotions of his past, both terrifying and delicious. He understood now that he was no ordinary boy. In what way he was special, Tom could not be certain. Was he really part of the family in his head? He brought his fist into the light, uncurled his fingers, looked at the pendant, and tried to conjure the memory he knew he had of this place. It was there, in his racing heart, the sweat on his forehead, the pull of fear tugging at his legs to slow him down. He was frightened. No. Terrified. If the ruin above Craigham was his home, this place was his hell. But when he dredged his mind for a map, for some idea of what lay ahead, it brought nothing but unconnected and uncontrolled fear. His pace began to drag, the soles of his feet, one long scuffling sound, followed by another. When his memory failed to deliver the information he needed, he tried logic and deduction. He quickly dismissed claustrophobia and natural caution and fear of the dark. Trying to see through the fog of his emotions, he recalled his visions with dispassionate analysis. But still, his scraping feet sounded like the backdrop to a condemned man's walk. This was his place. This is where they went to learn.
They have to learn.
This is where he took his mother, Tess. This thought kindled his anger, muffled his fear. Whatever lay ahead, gouged at a dormant and diseased lump stirring slowly in his soul. This is where the chairs were, the home of his pain. This was his lair. He knew all this, but still the memory refused to crawl from under its rock. Ahead, the tunnel walls fanned out and vanished. Tom paused on a half-dragged foot and turned his head from side to side. He removed the torch from his forehead and held it before him with his left hand, but the beam disappeared to a black hole. He shone it on the floor, noting the undisturbed dust of passing years, pushed the light out and up, sweeping it left and right to take in the chamber he was about to enter. And he felt it then too, a sense of openness, a blind man with one foot over the edge of a cliff. That foot scraped forward, and he stepped into the cave. But as he probed the torch ahead of him, he sensed something strange about the quality of the darkness beyond the beam. Pointing the torch to the side as he peered ahead, the void did not seem as black as it did when the glare had reflected into his eyes. He cupped the glass with his hand, smothering the light, but the cavern became brighter instead of blacker. With trembling fingers, he twisted the top and killed the beam. Second by second, the darkness drifted away to reveal a continuous and directionless wash of light that seemed to come from the walls, the floor, the ceiling, and even the very air itself. It was everywhere and nowhere at all. He moved forward, his feet still dragging, the loathing for the place tugging on his back. But the light brought with it a kindling of the memory he searched for. He looked around and saw a wooden table against the wall to his right, dust an inch thick. Something scurried to his left. It was so close that when he swiveled his head he was surprised to see nothing. There was nowhere for the creature to hide, but no matter how he stared, the animal remained invisible. More curious than frightened by some imaginary ghost rat, Tom continued the scan. A jumble of artifacts littered the table. Books, a pen, an empty ink jar, test tubes, needles. To the left of the table, covering an area of wall stretching over 30 feet, was a homemade bookcase, complete with an array of ancient volumes. He picked one at random and opened it. The pages were blank. He tried another, and it too was filled with page after page of nothingness. He flicked from cover to cover, felt the dust fill the air as he dislodged volume after volume, the roughness of thick fabric, the heft of each tome in his hands. The book stretched upwards to the ceiling, 4 meters away. He climbed a shelf and stretched higher, knocking the objects in the clouds of dust as he swept his hand over the top shelf, grabbing another as he tumbled backwards to the book-strewn floor. Lying there, he looked at the prize in his hand, felt the insane knowledge of what he was going to discover as he opened it, and saw the empty pages turn and turn and turn. Staggering to his feet, Tom looked around at the rest of the space and caught his breath. He had expected to see it, but when he did, the insanity of keeping 1,000 books of nothing faded to the background and he almost vomited on the spot. Stumbling over the scattered remains from the dislodged shelves, he walked forward in a bemused and terrified daze. A small archway led into another chamber from the wall opposite the bookshelves, and there he saw what had to be there. He craned his neck as he walked. Water flowed, the sound sudden thunder in the echo chamber of his head. He couldn't actually see them at first, but that did not stop the grip the image had on him as he closed the distance between him and his nightmare. What he did see was a small pool, surrounded by a lip of rock. He remembered it then, as if he was now walking towards it beside Tess, knowing what was to happen next. He would soon see the opening at the base of the artificial pond, the water gushing from the wall at one end, filling the pool and breaking through the gap to continue its journey out the mountain, past the cottage and into the sea. He could see nothing of this, but knew it just the same. And then he was there, standing in the archway looking at the strange high-backed chairs, and the buzzing in his head pushed him to his knees and threatened to give him what he thought he wanted. Memories.
DreamWorks.com.